Juan, take us away with your Juanaways.
All right, because I wanted to do this on the history, because I'm super passionate about the history, and I learned something. I didn't know that story about Tim talking to you. So, All right, history of knowledge. First of all, remember, none of this is new. Knowledge representation, the subfield of AI, representation of the world of the data, of the world and all the reasoning we're doing. Semantic web, we'll call it the predecessor of the modern knowledge graph. And the original scope was really broad because it was a scope for the entire web. Remember, it's the web. You usually say the word internet, but it's actually the web. My pet peeve. And the scope today, the knowledge graphs are within an enterprise. So the semantic web vision, I love this story. So you're at MIT and Tim Berners-Lee just walks to your door and says, what's wrong with the web? And you said, I want to build agents that can do stuff. That's another t-shirt quote. Build agents that can do stuff, which guess what? That's kind of what people are talking about right now. But the web was built for humans. And how do we solve this? We should look at these ontologies and knowledge representations. So Tim said, let's go do it. And so at the end of the day, our goal is here to combine data from different sources without human intervention. And really, knowledge graphs are this combination of data sources plus ontologies, which are this rich, expressive data model, which can go to the extreme manifestation of what a logical model is. And the goal is that you want to go build apps on top of this. Because today, applications are gatekeepers to a particular type of data, which leads to silos. With the knowledge graphs, they're not gatekeepers. Now it's about expressing about the user's intent. And something to realize is that not all graphs are knowledge graphs. So a couple more things. Technical question. So we talked about tables and graphs. There is a big difference in how you explain graphs to folks that come from the data world, from the table world. Coming from the SQL world, it's hard to make that leap. It's different, but at the same time, it isn't, because it's like, yeah, it's this is. I'm thinking about a table, but you're still kind of conceptualizing it in a way, right? Graphs give that flexibility. Graphs are not enough, though, right? We need modeling. We need vocabularies. We need to identify things. And we talked a lot about identifiers as a very key thing to understand how to uniquely identify things. And I think which is interesting is this open world and closed world assumption that if you think about it, I love this, RDF is the best technology for the use cases that you haven't been able to articulate today. Talking about RDF and labeled property graphs, you don't need to make that choice. I mean, the vision is that you should just be able to go choose whatever model it is and let it be Sparkle or Cypher. And these things are coming together. But at the end, I mean, if you look at today, RDF is best suited for knowledge graph because it supports identifiers, predictive behaviors to merge graphs, and the support for ontologies. And sometimes you just want to have a graph application where you really don't need that. So property graphs are fine. Whew, Tim, you go.
So much good stuff. All right. I was asking some questions around the business side of this, around the use cases and around adoption. Aura, you mentioned that the biggest use cases around knowledge graph are kind of centered around three main things. One of them is data integration. You said, you know, to hide the nasty layer of the data. And I know that when you look at things like, the data-centric architecture, right? And everything that's been written about that, right? McCombs, right? Like, I think, you know, there's a big aspect and an exciting opportunity here to leverage all the amazing work that's been invested in knowledge graphs, in RDF, as a way to solve some of our hairiest data integration challenges. And actually, Juan and I were back channeling a little bit even during this interview, talking about, oh my gosh, what would a world look like if data integration was easier, right? So data integration, one key thing, right? Second key thing, capture the knowledge of an organization and make it accessible. The democratization of data. Mm-hmm. I think today knowledge is thought of as fleeting, and it's more, you know, we think about wikis and documentation or the conversations people are having in email and Slack conversations. And, we need to be thinking about, and there's exciting opportunities and examples of knowledge graphs being leveraged to represent the knowledge of the organization, organizing it and allowing you to leverage that in a much more impactful way. You said graph queries are the answer to the question, how do I get there from here? Which I think is a great way to think about how graphs are democratizing the kinds of questions that you want to answer around your company's knowledge, around your organizational knowledge. And then third, you mentioned digital twins, right? Which are sort of a special case of a knowledge graph. a digital facsimile of a real life physical phenomenon. And, you know, whether you're applying it to things like Internet of Things or supply chains, there's a lot of flexibility and power that knowledge graphs offer that allow you to capture what you said, the inherent diversity of the real world. So I think those are three excellent use cases. I know we're doing, you know, a lot more with knowledge graphs now, even as you look to the world of generative AI and some of the interesting use cases of combining together knowledge graphs with generative AI. But a lot of that has to do with taking the knowledge of your organization, you know, the knowledge of the digital, you know, physical world and how they're connected, and data integration and bringing it all together. So I think those three use cases hold true, even if it's, you know, agents and AI that's leveraging that information in addition to humans. Yep. And then last but not least, around adoption, right? You said, you know, I first of all, don't quite understand that question. But second of all, like, there is adoption around knowledge graphs. There is interest. But, you know, there's more work to do. And, you know, the true victory lap might be when people are building applications and there's no novelty in saying, and by the way, this was a knowledge graph powered application, like, ooh, right? At the point that that's not interesting and novel anymore is when we've truly entered a new realm, right?
When people build things, nobody says, oh, and this is a relational database based application. Nobody says that.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that.
So that's victory, right? Graphs aren't new, and there's so much opportunity here. So and last but not least, Juan, you asked a question that Omar and you have talked about around the knowledge economy, and Aura, you posed, you know, there is a lot of exciting opportunity around what might shift as we move to more of a knowledge first world, as we maybe introduce this idea of a knowledge economy. You know, what if there were knowledge products? What if there was a business model where you could actually sell that knowledge to others? You know, this could allow a kind of a new vision and expansion of what's possible around the semantic web. So definitely something very interesting there.
So how did we do? Anything we missed?
What's that?
Anything we missed in our discussion?
I think it was good. There's always more, right?
One thing I really liked about was, we talk about the use cases, data integration, capture the knowledge of organization. The digital twin is like that perfect mix of both, right? You need to integrate data coming from many different sources. And that part of that integration is not just the data, but the knowledge. So, all right, we got to wrap up before they're kicking us out of this room, because they're kind of, we're supposed to leave here in less than 3 minutes. So quick, what's your advice? Who should invite next? And what resources do you follow?
What resources do I follow? So honestly, I don't have time to read all this stuff that's like the you know, what's new today kind of stuff. There's so much old stuff I don't understand, and I'm still reading that stuff. I tend to be the kind of person who has to go way, way, way deep to claim that I actually understand something. So, which usually means I have to write some software that does it. That to me, that's like understanding something. So, I talk to people a lot, you know, so a lot of my information sources are kind of like word of mouth, and then I go and I go deep. Who should you invite next? When should you invite some academic next, you know, and see what's going on and you know, like what's coming over the horizon for enterprise.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Aura, thank you so much. We went through, I think, most of the questions that people wanted. We were grouping them together. Quick reminder, next week, Tim and I will both be live in Gartner. We're going to be actually in London all next week. And we are going to figure out, well, we're going to probably have a live moment. I don't know. We're going to figure out next week. But the coolest thing is that next week, it's actually our 4-year anniversary of doing Catalan Cocktails. So folks listening to us, we are going to be in London. It's on Friday. Next Friday, the 17th, we're going to do a happy hour. So for folks in London, let's go hang out and let's go celebrate doing this podcast for 4 years. So
can't believe it's been 4 years. It'll be a lot of fun.
That's amazing. And with that, Aura, thank you so much. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.